Chisholm Clark is a legal search firm that provides lawyers with a private and professional approach to legal recruitment. With a deep understanding of the New Zealand legal market, we connect talented lawyers with active and off-market opportunities, prioritising their career success and fulfilment above all else. We are also proud to support the What a Lawyer podcast and all the amazing lawyers featured on the show. Kia ora te whanau, nō mai hoki mai, and welcome back to the What a Lawyer podcast. I'm your host, Sam Lindsay, by training and trade a professional agent in the New Zealand legal market and co-director of Chisholm Clark. And joining me on the show today is a very special guest. Hailing from up north and going through Whanganui Collegiate, he attended the University of Canterbury, met some cool people, and had a wow of a time. He finished with a double degree in law and commerce, then went straight into the Public Defence Service in Canterbury as a supervised provider, having spent 5.5 years there and alongside a semi-professional boxing career that saw him defend his New Zealand light heavy title in 2018, he left the PDS as a senior, respected lawyer. With that experience, he then took a year off to do a Te Reo Māori immersion course in Tauranga, his late father's tribal homeland, which meant a great deal to him. He was then headhunted into this current role doing prosecutions this time on behalf of the Crown through Pollitt Legal, the Crown solicitor in Tauranga. He's a respected member of the Criminal Law Society and a dear friend to me. What a lizard, what a lawyer. It's Sonny Tiki Clark.
Kia ora, Amy. Kia ora, Ete Iwi, all the listeners out there. Special mention to my colleagues who actually got word that I was going to be on here. I think they saw the post on LinkedIn. So, yeah, greetings to all and thanks for having me, mate.
Good stuff. And thanks so much for being with us, Sonny. We appreciate your time. So, mate, what's been going on with you lately?
Look, personally, my partner just moved to the Mount, so that's kind of been a great development in my personal life. Work-wise, mate, it's never-ending.
Yeah. On today's episode with you, we're going to be diving deep into criminal law and the lawyer's role in it, and we're obviously lucky to have you on the show with such a unique perspective, having done both sides. We've got a bit to get through, so let's launch in with the defence side of things. And Sonny, can you start us off by telling us what is the role of a defence lawyer?
I think when you boil it all down to it, it's really to do the best for your client. You're their representative, advocate, and voice. And I think the face that, well, what that looks like in practice has many different faces. So we can, I suppose break that down a bit if you like. Yeah. I think sometimes for outsiders looking in, they may underlook just how client-centered your role as a defence lawyer is. Most of my defence work was for the Public Defence Service, so all of my clients were through legal aid. So you imagine you're dealing with some of the most difficult and vulnerable people. Mm. And then on top of that, you're dealing with them in a difficult and vulnerable circumstances. Mm-hmm. And quite often they're all you've got. And I think perhaps for those who haven't practiced in defence law, I think sometimes that can be something that's overlooked. And it was certainly something that I found very rewarding and challenging when I was defence counsel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can see that the relationship there is paramount, right?
That's exactly it. Managing that relationship is actually a huge part of your job, and that's before you get anywhere near a courtroom.
Yeah, before the actual technical skills take over, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
A lot of people skills and, motivational interviewing, kind of diffusing.
Yeah,
and having difficult conversations. Yeah.
So naturally, you've got a pretty interesting insight here to these people, and obviously, the circumstance that we talked about. Let's just say there's a morally questionable client. You know, signs are pointing towards them having done the deed, and it's your job as defence counsel to do your job. Where do you draw the line there? That's an interesting one for me.
Yeah, I think that's kind of a question that a lot of people Particularly when I first started out, how do you go about, representing guilty people? And I think you've got to think of it that actually most of your clients, the majority of them, the New Zealand police aren't typically in the habit of deliberately charging innocent people. And so for the most part, your clients will have been guilty of something. And acting in their best interests doesn't always mean going to trial with little chance of, defending the charges or avoiding the responsibility. A lot of your work as defence counsel is accepting responsibility at an appropriate level, identifying rehabilitative needs and opportunities, and doing everything you can to give them those opportunities, which are unfortunately not always easy to come by. Then, of course, you've got that other small portion of let's say the clients that will go to trial. Now, a portion of those are genuinely innocent, right? And I think that's kind of the, you say, like a romanticized version of being a defense lawyer. You're to kill a mockingbird, and
Gotcha.
you're getting the innocent guy off. Then there's that small subset amongst all of those, which I think is where your question was heading to, which is the person that did it, but it's your job, I suppose, to raise some doubt. I think you figure this out ethically and morally as you're going along and as you get into the job. You've really got to buy in to the system as a whole. The sort of bedrock principles, the presumption of innocence, that everyone deserves representation, and that we're all protected by the burden and standard of proof. Rules of evidence, rules of procedure. And I think when you start to have a greater sense of what those things look like in practice, you understand that actually you have an important role in the wider cogs or system of justice. And that's your job, And unfortunately, all jobs, have some that's tasteful, if you say, or parts that you don't like. But yeah, I suppose it's a greater good kind of argument or feeling when you're in those situations.
Cool. So could you tell us about like a really complex case? I mean, something that you can talk about?
This probably dovetails a bit from your previous question, but I remember one of the very first cases I ever worked on as a defense lawyer. We'll call him Larry. Nasty piece of domestic violence. Really bad. It sort of involved kettle cording. His partner, the children were home. It was truly awful. And I just thought, God, is this what I've signed up for? And then you sort of hear his perspective on it. And this came in the form of a police interview, and he explained that he was actually working about 60-hour weeks. They had six children under the age of six, I believe, he and his partner, and hadn't seen the kids in about 2 or 3 days. And when he did, they hadn't eaten since he'd last seen them, and his partner had essentially used all of his wages to purchase methamphetamine. And I think that was just an interesting, baptism by fire, I suppose, for just how there's always sort of two sides, and it's important to, nothing justified what he did, of course, but I think to properly sentence him or pass judgment on him, you have to be aware of all of the circumstances, including his in particular. But the funny thing about that particular individual is, I represented him years later when I was a bit more experienced. And this is kind of one of the aspects of being a defence lawyer that I really loved, is just the different walks of life and stories that these people have. And I was talking in court to a senior probation officer who mentioned to me just how bright Larry was. And that was something that totally escaped me the first time I was dealing with him. And a senior police officer actually overheard that conversation and told me a story about how he had stopped Larry back in the day, I think early 90s, in an old Holden Commodore with a clandestine methamphetamine lab in the boot. And I think back in those days, New Zealand didn't really know what methamphetamine was, and certainly not, you know, it was fairly well unknown at that time. Anyway, the police officer tells me that the police experts weren't able to figure out how his lab was successfully manufacturing methamphetamine. And I ended up telling that story to Larry, I think it was a couple of days later, and he laughed and told me that, yes, he remembered the time, and then proceeded to tell me how he had come up with the recipe while he was sitting on the front porch of his grandmother's house, high on LSD, watching rays of sunlight hit the leaves as the sun rose. So, you know, a guy like that, no formal education, I just, it's kind of like a real life Breaking Bad almost. And you just, I always remember him wondering what he could have achieved if he'd had some of the opportunities I had. Or,
okay.
Yeah.
We know that you obviously have a bit of a history as a boxer coming up through the New Zealand ranks, and naturally you'd love a good process to prepare for a fight. Same question with regard to a defense trial. You know, is there any specific process or?
Yeah, I mean, you're obviously aware of my boxing background, being a long-term friend of mine, but some of your listeners might not be, but I think everyone with a legal profession finds out at some point, whether it's word of mouth or an old news article or something. But yeah, I think the big thing with in boxing is in law is just your preparation. Preparation, preparation, preparation. Beyond that, I think it also gave me suppose insight into things that translated from my sporting career into my professional career. You know, the importance of having a strong team and good people in your corner, handling pressure and expectations, that being able to perform under lights, particularly in a martial arts environment, translates over quite well to the theatre of court. I suppose, yeah.
Cool.
I think the disappointment and perspective of a loss is also a good one. Being able to manage that, and I think there's a stamina concentration that's required, particularly during a long trial, that I think, yeah, boxing did a lot to prepare me for.
Yeah, nice. Cool. Thanks so much for sharing that insight, especially on the defense side of criminal law. If we now put the other hat on and go over to the prosecution side, let's start with the same question: is what's their role as a lawyer?
I suppose, again, as a just in a very general sense, you're essentially representing the Crown or the community, I guess. And your role is essentially to prosecute the perpetrators of crime and hold them accountable. So, like, rather than, you know, having your client's interests as kind of the core value or as your core driver as a defence counsel, with the Crown you have the prosecution guidelines, which they're great. Essentially, your instructions and your brief on what you should be doing, what your role is.
Yeah. Okay. And again, same question around the morally questionable situation with someone that is on the receiving end of your services. Let's just say you've got an inkling, or someone has an inkling, that there is reasonable doubt that this person did not do what they were accused of. How do you navigate that in the prosecution's role?
Yeah, that's a tough one, actually. There's sort of an, I can't remember who told me, an old mentor of mine, who said when you're delivering your Crown closing, you've first got to persuade yourself that the defendant's guilty. Otherwise, you're never going to persuade a jury. And look, you do have those margin calls. I think, again, you just got to go back to what your role is within the wider system. And that's not your decision to make at the end of the day. That's why we have juries and why we have judges. And what that process requires is that the prosecution does their job to the best of their ability within the confines of the law and procedure. The defence do their best job, and it's actually the fact finder and the judge who, make those margin calls, because essentially most of the job, it's a lot of the decision making actually comes within the margins and in that kind of grey area, if you will.
And besides preparation as being your answer for the first question on the defense side around, tactics for trial, would you be able to give us a wee bit of detail around what preparation might look like for a prosecution?
Yeah, certainly. And this probably is one of the ties in with one of the key distinctions between being a defence and prosecutor is, rather than interacting with your client, you're as a prosecutor, all of your interactions are with police, and then through the police, you then deal with the victims or the families of victims, and so that looks very different
Totally different.
in practice, and then in terms of presenting the case, you have the standard and burden of proof to overcome, so you're kind of doing more of the foundational work than when you're in defence. So I think being able to, having come from defence and dealt with defendants in difficult circumstances, it did prepare me well for becoming a Crown Prosecutor and dealing with victims of crimes, many of whom will then become one of your most important witnesses, and actually, again, managing that relationship, that human side of it, will go a long way towards preparing or presenting effectively at trial.
Mate, thanks for that. That's some pretty good stuff on defense and prosecution. So,
And look, there's many senior lawyers that would probably have a lot more to say and a lot more experience than me, but that's what stands out to me.
yeah, totally. Oh, no, I appreciate that. Have you experienced any other personal challenges with the change to prosecutions?
I suppose my journey from defence over to prosecution had a bit of a gap in it. So when I finished up, as with my practice at the Public Defence Service, I took a year off and did a Te Reo Māori immersion course, which was a wonderful experience that I could go on about at length. And it was after that that I started with the Crown, which I suppose is a bit of a juxtaposition, doing a year learning Te Reo Māori and reconnecting with your culture, and then going to work for the Crown, who might be seen by some as symbolic of the oppressors or something like that. But I wondered how that sort of change might go, but it's been quite seamless. My boss and a lot of people within the Crown network are looking for Māori lawyers so that they can work with us so that the Crown can do things better on their end. There's a lot of wonderful work going on within Crown law at the moment around the Solicitor General's guidelines, which when I'm able to, I can contribute to. And I think the other thing as well is just it's important to have Māori prosecutors in there because a lot of the victims of crimes are also Māori, and it's important that their voice is heard.
Absolutely.
I suppose being Māori as well, it's still not okay, and it's important sometimes that someone Māori is the person delivering that message. And I've really felt that I've always been warmly received by Māori families of people I'm prosecuting, for example. So, personal challenge and a very rewarding experience.
Cool. For season two of the What a Lawyer podcast, we've got this new section called Ask Me Anything, or an AMA, basically. What we've done is we've polled our audience in LinkedIn and asked them to submit some questions to you if they've got any. We've managed to pull two through for this episode, and I'll ask you the first one. You can have a yarn, then the second one, we'll do the same thing. So the first question is, what happens to criminal lawyers once they become a bit more senior?
I suppose that's kind of where I'm getting to in my career. So I'm kind of at that juncture. I'm currently with the Crown, and what I've seen with most of the sort of Crown, senior Crown solicitors that have come before me, those that sort of don't become partners or take on Crown warrants end up going to the defence bar. So you can sort of change sides, if you will. But the sort of more senior, you know, sort of another 10, 15 years beyond that, there's obviously becoming a judge. Which, you know, people will often ask me about whether I've got ambitions of that, and I think I'm a good 10 years away from even crossing that bridge or looking into that. But yeah, I think if you're going to stay within the criminal law, that's kind of you tend to just either swap sides and progress within the profession, or there's the bench. Yeah,
cool. And second question is, what future challenges do you see for the criminal bar over the next 10 years?
Without, I suppose, getting too political on your podcast, I think, and you know, I think from a recruitment perspective, this might be interesting to some of your audience. I do think there's going to be a significant shortage of skilled criminal lawyers. That's not going to get any better in the immediate to medium term future, and the reason for that is essentially a lot of the senior and experienced lawyers have either retired or joined the bench, and really due to changes in funding criminal lawyers that happened 10 to 14 years ago now, the new sort of the next generation, if you will, of top lawyers aren't there and haven't built the skills and experience within criminal law. And I think that's going to be a major challenge for the profession.
Cool. Yeah. Thank you. And hopefully that's answered the question nicely for our audience member. Cool. So as per last season as well, we've got our final quick fire three for you, Sonny. Last season was five, this year it's three. First question for you is, why did you choose to specialise in criminal law?
I fell into it, I guess. When I was sitting profs, one of the modules that we do is essentially advocacy in the mock trial. I didn't sign up for that at university. I ought to have now, because I really took to it. And the woman who was taking my prof's course just took me aside and said, look, you need to be doing criminal law. And I suppose really made that choice for me when I was a bit directionless about what challenge was next or what area of law I wanted to get into. And once I was there, it ticked a lot of boxes for me. It was, you know, challenging. I dealt with people, interesting work, rewarding. Yeah. And before you know it, I'd spent 5.5 years slugging it out as a defense lawyer.
Yeah, good man. Next question is, what is something you wish law school had better prepared you for when entering the real world?
I sort of shot myself in the foot with my last answer, because I think some of those mock trial kind of things were available to me at law school. I just didn't take them up. So that's on me. That's certainly not the law school's fault. But I think more generally with education, I think your best learning isn't always done in a classroom. It's not the optimal environment, particularly if you like being active like I do. I do think there were perhaps more opportunities there for some more practical learning, you know, getting to the courtroom, whatever, visiting land, if it's land law, or getting out and seeing parts of the environment, if there's sort of environmental issues, I think, yeah, actually getting out and living it, yeah, it could have been done a bit more. But yeah, I could have gone and done that on my own accord, couldn't I?
Okay, and last question for you is, what is a piece of advice that you would give a young Sonny?
Don't do those things I just talked about. I could go all day if, you know, if you'd let me. But I think strictly within that law space, I let myself coast a bit at university. And that would be my one bit of advice is don't coast, you know, like get stuck into it, get into those kind of advocacy seminars, make a point of finding out that your passion is about this, because
yeah, I feel like a lot of people would empathize with what you just said. Thanks so much for your honesty and just for sharing your story and your wisdom so far, Sonny. So before we sign off, thank you so much to our market, our listeners and subscribers. It's a fun prospect doing season two for you guys. So thank you so much for your ongoing support. If you have any feedback on this episode with Sonny, please leave us a rating on your podcast app or email sam@chismclark.co.nz so that we can continue to produce more of the conversations that you want to hear. And lastly, a massive thanks to our awesome guest, Sonny Tiki Clark, for joining us on the podcast and sharing his story, cluing us in a little bit more on the defense and prosecution side of criminal law. What a legend, what a lawyer, Sonny Tiki Clark.
Thank you, Glenn, for having me, mate. It's been an absolute pleasure. I can't actually believe how fast it went. Yeah, look, I hope your audience enjoys it and found it interesting. And yeah, it's really been an honor and a privilege coming on your podcast. So thanks for having me, mate.
No worries. Thanks, bro. Appreciate your time. Take care.
Modi order.
I love catching up with that guy. He's got a good story to tell and he's happy to share. And although he may have worn one or two during his boxing career, he's still clearly the sharpest tool in the shed. Diving into criminal law was something I was quite interested in, and especially the elements of prosecution and defence being so different yet also so similar. Picking Sonny's brain was a really good place to start. On the defence side, it became clear that even though you need technical skills to argue a case and your client's defence, it ultimately does come down to the relationship that you can generate between you and your client plus you in the courtroom. He mentioned in any defence trial or prosecution for that fact, preparation was the key element towards success. In switching over to that prosecution side, it was really interesting to hear Sonny's perspective on representing the Crown now instead of the individual or the community that he has connected so well with. And the questions I threw at him around the morally questionable situation, he basically answered in the same way, is to essentially look past your personal view on the case and rather do your job. The one thing that you could perhaps consider in that context is what he said around convincing a jury is you actually have to convince yourself first. So I guess take that part and parcel. Sonny's insight into the potential future of the criminal bar and what happens to senior lawyers once they reach a point in their career where they can make a choice, I found that quite interesting because that obviously paints a picture for our junior lawyers as to where they want to end up, and then naturally reverse engineering that to where they need to start. I love that chat, and thanks so much for tuning in to another episode of the What a Lawyer podcast. Thanks so much again to Sonny for being such a wonderful guest and sharing his story and insight into criminal law. We'll catch you again for our next episode soon. Cheers.